We're now in session.
Caller, you on the air?
Yo, yo, what's going on? It's your man DJ EZB calling in from Atlanta.
Hey, what's going on, DJ EZB, brother? What's good?
Chilling. What's going on with you, King? Just checking in with you, man, on this Thursday night.
Man, glad you called, man. And what's going on with you?
Just chilling right now, man. You know what I'm saying? Had of course, you know, for those that didn't know, I had been working on this documentary called Music Lovers, Why Are You Who You Are? Just because of just really being disappointed what's going on in music as a DJ and at eating at my passion, I was inspired to do this film and try to bring awareness to what's really going on in hip-hop music and just the culture in general.
Oh, I see, man. I see. And they need to know. Everybody need to know. Hey, for starters, you wanna tell the people your background or where you started out and on up to now? I'm gonna let you just speak, man. This is gonna be enlightening to everybody, man.
Well, I just wanna say, first of all, you know, I appreciate you for extending the time for me to come on your show. You and of course my man Chill Up Radio, you know what I'm saying? Being affiliated with the whole family and what have you, you know. Basically, I guess my story is, I'm not gonna say it's any different than any other DJ's story, but you know, I started DJing when I was about like 14, 15 years old. And you know, a lot of DJs pretty much had that same story, or you know, you started either in a bedroom or a basement, and you know, you just worked out there until you were able to get to a point where you were good enough to go out and play and try to make money off of your passion,
yeah,
or your craft. Basically, what happened for me was a little bit different, because I was actually playing around with DJing, and I'm actually a b-boy, so I was into the whole dance thing real tough. That's kind of like how I got my name, because cats would always say to me, hey man, you make it look so easy, just the moves that I was doing it. And because I was actually a breaker, you know what I'm saying, actually doing the moves on the floor.
Yeah.
I dropped the R-E-A-K off my name, signifying my identity as a b-boy. And the word easy is what they kept saying. So I added DJ, and that's how I got DJ EZB.
Oh, really? Oh, man, that's cool.
Yeah, that's how the name came about. So it's not anything that I just made up a name, like a lot of DJs just make up names.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that type thing. It actually really has some kind of meaning to me. And you know, for those that don't know, the word break dance comes from the word break, which is the breaks that the DJ played.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how that title came up, by the breaks that the DJ played. These particular guys would come out and dance on the breaks. So if it was a James Brown, or if it was, you know, a popular break, you know what I'm saying, this is when that actually would occur. And that's the reason why they call them b-boys or break boys.
Yeah.
Because they would come out at that particular time.
I see, man. You know, a lot of people don't know that. You know, a lot of people just do not know, or don't care to know. You know what I'm saying? That's the sad part about it. You know, people listen to music all day long, but they don't really know where it comes from. You know, even of today's music, like where the samples come from, none of that stuff, man. You know, the dances that are done today that they think may be new, you know, you guys probably were doing that back in the days. The same stuff, they just added a twist onto it.
Right. You know? Well, you know, a lot of people, even if you dig a little bit further into the art of dancing, you can go back and you can Google search or YouTube search cats back in the 20s and 30s, and a lot of the moves that they were doing were moves that became the moves that cats was doing in the 80s. So it goes a little bit further than that, but what happens really is that, you know, that's not me trying to exclude or, you know, trying to not give credit to anybody else, but we as Black Americans in America, we come from a people of dance, a people of music, from Africa. So when the slaves were brought here, that whole culture was brought here, even though we, you know what I'm saying, like second generation, third generation, you start bringing on generations, you know, they started losing or had started to lose their own identity. We had to create our own identity in this country because we didn't have that. Say like for example, and I'm gonna try to get too deep or sound like Farrakhan, but you know, it's like you'll have New York, and you'll have a Italian community, you'll have a Asian community, Chinatown, these type places. Well, these people can pick up the phone and talk to their people back in their home country, or they can buy a plane ticket and go back to their home country. Whereas that we as Black Americans, we don't have that. So we kind of like had to create everything from our own style, language, the way that we do everything. So we're a unique people. And the reason why I touched on that is because all of the different things, every genre of music, we basically had our hands in contributing to it. That's of course jazz, of course hip-hop, of course rock and roll, of course R&B, of course blues. Of course, you can't name a genre of music that we didn't have our hands in and were the people that basically founded this music.
Yeah, that's true, amongst other things too.
right.
Yeah, man. So I gotta tell you, let's talk about this movie, man. Congratulations, man, on getting accepted to the Hip Hop Film Festival, man.
I appreciate that, really do. I'm gonna have to get up and actually look at the cover because I don't want to leave any names out.
Yes, yeah, names on there.
But some of the people that I had actually in the film is of course my man Rodney Stone. Rodney Stone was actually with the group hip hop group of Funky Four. Funky Four plus one more. They had a first female rapper in the group. Her name was Sha Rock. And after that situation came to an end with them, according to what Rodney was telling me, is that the double trouble had came out of that group with him and KK Rockwell. And you can actually see them in the movie Wild Style. Next person in the film is a guy named DJ Hollywood. For a lot of those that don't really or know or familiar with this guy, Hollywood was basically accredited to, of course we've all heard the saying, throw your hands in the air and wave them like you just don't care. He was that person that actually said this first. Basically, we as DJs, when you take the crossfader or the upfader and you let the crowd respond to the words in the songs, he was the one that actually brought that whole concept of call and response to the whole situation. So the next person after that is Grand Wizard Theodore, and for those that don't know, Grand Wizard Theodore is the guy that was accredited for scratching. He was the guy that actually was the person that started the whole concept of scratching. The next person after that is a guy named Cutmaster DC. He's actually, DC is actually a DJ and an MC, and he was really known for playing on three turntables at one time. The next person after that is Kev Ski. Kev Ski is a well-rounded individual, but Kev was right there at the forefront with JoJo Torres. And JoJo is the founder of Original Skills Crew, but he's also a founder of the Original Rocksteady Crew. And a lot of people don't know this either, that out of that Crazy Legs went and established another chapter of Rocksteady Crew, and that's what people get used to, or they look at as Crazy Legs as the founder of Rocksteady Crew. He is, but he's not the founder of the original Rocksteady Crew. And that was even something that I had to find out. There was, you know, there was division, and there's even problems even to this day with some of these pioneers. The next person is Tracy 168. Tracy 168 is a writer, and a lot of times these I had to come to understand we call it graffiti. But they take that term as how do you say it? Not a disrespectful term, but they look at it as graffiti is bullshit. I'm a writer, and I had to learn that by talking to Tracy. And Tracy is he's a very unique individual. He's very of course artistic, but he is the guy that formulated the wild style form of writing. The next person that's actually in the film is the group Houdini. That's Jahlil, Ecstasy, and a lot of people don't know, but what happened, their DJ was Grandmaster D, but due to some situations that developed over the years, they kind of like parted ways with Drew Carter, who was Grandmaster D. The person is actually doing a lot of the DJing and road work for Houdini now. It's a guy named Mel Starr. He's actually in the film too. I'm gonna get to him a little bit later. But also, you have Doc Ice, that's with the group UTFO. And I didn't know myself, but I didn't know that Doc and Jahlil from Houdini were brothers. And I found that out, during the course of the time of the interview. So, it's, this piece is very educational. I mean, even me, a hip-hop enthusiast as I am, and historian, it was certain things that I had to get clarification on while doing this film. The next person is a guy named Steve D. Steve D is actually the founder of what they called now beat juggling. It's initially the name was called the funk. This is what it was called. It was called the funk, not beat juggling. It later became beat juggling, but Steve is also the forefront of the X-Men. And under the X-Men umbrella came DJs like Rock Raider, rest in peace to Rock Raider, Rob Swift, Mr. Sinister, and Total Eclipse. And there were other X-Men also as well, but those individuals that I just named went on and established the Executioners, because what was happening is that they were having a problem. Of course, the X-Men and dealing with Stan Lee with Marvel Comics, they couldn't use that name, so that was the reason why they used the name the Executioners. Also, in DJ Flawless, he's actually the actual son of the legendary DJ Rock and Rob. He's actually in the film. Next person is Mel Starr. Mel Starr is the thing that I like about Mel is that he was really intrigued about this new form of being able to play music on the new radio, I guess. The new technology, just like this radio show that I'm speaking on now. But the thing that was unique about Mel was that he started to micromanage other DJs. And what they did is, instead of him just being on his own show, he would have so many DJs under his roster, and they would play music 7 days, 5 days a week, from maybe 8 o'clock in the morning to 12 midnight every night. So that became like the I'm not gonna say the new form of radio, but it was a thing where, you know, you can actually go on a computer and tune in, and you know, you get a variety of different type of DJs, but also at the same time too, you know, you can with that, unlike the radio, you can interact with the DJ. You can tell, hey DJ, play this or that, and you can actually see the DJ. And that's what makes it that a lot different now with the technology. The next person is TJ Mizell. TJ Mizell is one of the sons of the great legend Jam Master J from the group Run DMC. rest in peace to Jam Master Jay. I actually got a chance to tell TJ that his father, you know, was basically one of the reasons, one of the influencing factors to me being a DJ today. And I think that how more honorable could that be than to have someone come up to you and tell you that your father put out so much positivity in the universe that, you know, you have people coming to you and saying, man, if it wasn't for your father, or your father influenced me to, you know, to DJ.
Now that's crazy, man. That's dope. Wow.
Yeah, I got DJ Kim Possible.
Yeah.
And DJ Lady Love, and I'm gonna couple them together because I had both of them sitting right side by side, and what I wanted to do is show two female DJs, letting the audience see that we, hip hop community or DJ community, we just don't have it segregated to just men. Even though it was male dominated, there are women DJs now, and there's also advantages of having a DJ school to go to now, like DJ Scratch Academy and other schools that have come about due to the popularity of DJing over the years. But what I wanted to do is put these two women side by side so you can see one that had the advantage of a school and the other one that didn't have the advantage of a school and had to basically had to gain her knowledge and experience hard knocks. And it was just, you know, the things that they said were just, you know, it was just amazing and enlightening. Next person is DJ Crazy Bizarro out of Bushwick. And Bizarro came up through, let me get it right. He's affiliated with DJ Evil D, Black Moon, Bootcamp Click, Mr. Walt, all those people. And basically what me speaking to Bizarro and him expressing how and what inspired him to do what he did to become the DJ that he is now. And it was just some amazing thing. He said he got fired from his job on purpose, and he said he was gonna live off this hip hop stuff. And it's just, you know, when he said it wasn't that it was shocking, but it was just that's how real it is. He said he got fired from his job. He got a Mac, and he said once he got his Mac, his life changed, and he said, I'm going to live off this hip-hop thing, and that's what he's doing. He's doing to this day. So, I mean, that's my dude. You know, shout out to the Brooklyn, you know what I'm saying? The next people after that is Son of Berserk. And Son of Berserk basically came up under the Long Island scene. There was a lot of cats that came out of Long Island. Public Enemy, De La Soul, EPMD, I'm just trying to make sure I had it on the tip of my tongue. Rakim, you know, Son of Berserk. But what they represent in the film is how hip this inner city thing started moving into the suburbs, and until it became, into the suburbs, into the tri-state area, until it became a thing where it became global. Because a lot of people that they like had family in New York, they would go to New York and record BLS and KISS, the radio stations, they would be having the master mix shows. And I mean, I'm guilty of that myself. And I would literally not just want to record the songs that were being played and stop and put it on pause. I wanted the commercials too as well. And I kind of joked about it because there's one commercial in particular back in the 80s. It's a department store. I didn't want to say department store, but a sneaker store called Vim. And they announced it would come and say, with VIM stores in Brooklyn, the Bronx, Manhattan, Queens, Staten Island, Long Island. I mean, I even know the order that they announced the boroughs in order because I played this tape so much, and this is when it was tapes, no CDs. It was when it was tapes. And those things were things that basically kept me abreast of what was going on in New York with other channels also as well. But that's the way a lot of people that were down south were able to hear what was going on in New York by these tapes that were being recorded off of BLS and KISS.
I'm guilty.
At that time, you know what I'm saying?
I'm guilty.
And basically what Son of Berserk, they were talking about what was going on, what Chuck and Flay were doing before they got together and formulated Public Enemy. And it was just, you know, I got a lot of behind the scenes, and I didn't even know Chuck had some solo songs before he even got with Flavor Flav. That was on Vanguard Records. And this is something that Berserk told me in the interview. So that was something that I had never heard. So the next clip is actually the clip where I got an opportunity to speak about my passion and how I got into what I got into. But it was really funny that I was actually DJing the Public Enemy after party. And PE don't usually have after parties. They're not known for having after parties. But what happened, a good friend of mine, a guy named Vic London, he's a producer. He actually was good friends with Keith Shockley and Hank Shockley, and they were having an after party, and Keith was DJing, but they wanted me to assist Keith in doing the party.
Yeah.
So that's how I got into, or how the door was open for me to do the Public Enemy after party. But what was crazy about it was the party was a year before I even came up with the idea or the thought process of even doing this film. So when it got to the end part, I was like, how can I say what I need to say? And I was like, wow, I've already said it, because I said it a year ago, and it was at the Public Enemy after party, and it fits right in because they were just talking about what Chuck and Flay were doing before they formulated Public Enemy. So I thought it was kind of amazing, the stuff that I was saying. It was relevant then, and it's still relevant now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was meant to be. That's how I look at it. It was meant to be.
Yeah, and there was a lot of amazing things that along the way that I had got confirmation from the Most High that I was doing the right thing, and I share these two, and I mean, it's still amazing to me today. It's more than these two, but it's like when you hear these, it's just like, wow. I mean, what other answer can you give? And I'm gonna make it as condensed and make sense as much as possible. The first situation was I had got held up for 10 months by this guy who was actually a young guy from Long Island, and he held me up for 10 months, and I don't blame him. I just think he was just timid. He just really didn't know what to do. So I got frustrated, and I was speaking to a friend of mine in Virginia. He knew that I was serious about this project, so he gave me the number to another editor in New York. So I called this guy in New York. I explained the concept to him. He immediately wanted to edit the film, the footage that this other guy previously had shot. So I didn't know what to do. So I said, with this whole situation. So I told the guy in New York that I was going to come get the footage. But prior to me going to New York, I was speaking to my friend in Virginia. He gives me this number to this other editor. So I don't know what this guy looks like. I'm just talking to him on the phone. So I go up to New York, and me and my man, Jazzymoto, Eric Jazzymoto Williams.
Man, shout out to Jazzymoto.
Yeah. I set him as the co-director, because I was having issues with some of the people, and I couldn't be back and forth between Atlanta and New York trying to chase these people. So I made him the co-director of the film, because he could reset the interviews up and get these people, you know, at leisure, I guess at the leisure or when the timing was right. So me and Jazzy are hanging out in Harlem. The mission was accomplished. I got the footage. Me and Jazzy were on our way back to Brooklyn, because Jazzy actually lives in Brooklyn. We were hanging out up at this place called Perks up in Harlem, and I saw JDL from the Cold Crush, and saw Mel, and just different people. Kaz, Grandmaster Kaz, just different people just hanging out in the street. So me and Jazzy were on our way back to Brooklyn, and we were coming down the stairs coming to the platform, and we just, you know, got in the train car and were on our way. But little did we know that the guy that I had been speaking to on the phone from Atlanta was in the same train car. Out of all the people in the world, all the scenarios, all the variables, he could have been anywhere, we could have been anywhere. How did we end up in the same train car at the same time? It was just amazing. And this is what I had told Jazzy. Matter of fact, we had just left from Chill Lover Fight, and I was telling him how a lot of strange things had been happening to me in putting this film together. And Then Jazzy got an opportunity to experience it himself. And what happened is he saw this guy, he struck up a conversation with the guy because the guy had a camera. And so they're talking about the camera and different things. So the guy gives him his card, his business card, and the number that was on the card was the same number that I was calling from Atlanta.
Wow. That's crazy.
Let me give you another one, so you'll really understand how the Most High has been helping me. When I came back from New York, I had a void with DJ Hollywood, the guy I was telling you about, that coin phrase, throw your hands in the air and waving like you just don't care. Hollywood is a more mature in the game. He was actually playing in the clubs, and from what Rodney was telling me is that, see, a lot of the people that was in, from that generation, they were too young to go in the clubs. And in the clubs, you had to wear, you know, dress shoes, and you had to dress nice, because back then that was like during the disco era. So the younger people that were coming up didn't have a place to go, and what we call hip hop out in the parks became their place. Whereas the people that were the mature people that were older than they were able to go into clubs. So I would just give me that little history real quick. But Hollywood wasn't interested in doing the film, and I couldn't understand it at first, but as I, you know, started looking a little bit more, when you're that type of person, you have all types of people coming at you because of your status or what you've done, you know, in hip hop. And you don't know who's being sincere, who's just out to try to get at you. I left from New York with this void, and I was actually working this seasonal job. And at this seasonal job, they paired me up with a guy, and they wanted me to train this guy. So the guy just said, he said he was from New York. And I said, well, that's pretty funny, because I just came back from New York. He said, well, what? He asked me, what was I doing? I said, well, I'm a DJ, but I'm working on a film. He said, well, maybe you can DJ my birthday party when my birthday comes. And I just asked him, okay, when is your birthday? He said, April 4th. And I was shocked, because his birthday was on the same day as my birthday. And, you know, it bugged me out, you know, because his birthday. And I was telling him about the concept of the film and everything. And I said, Hollywood didn't want to participate in the film. And he simply said, I have his phone number. And I was like, wow. But I was still feeling doubt, because, I mean, I asked Jaleel from Houdini to speak, and other people that actually know Hollywood to speak on my behalf. But he wasn't interested. So he said, don't worry, we're going to call him after work. So we called Hollywood after work. He didn't answer. It took up to the third phone call to get Hollywood on the phone. So when we got Hollywood, he's talking to Hollywood, and he said, Hollywood, I met this guy in Atlanta that's working on this film. He said that you're supposed to be in it, and I want you to speak to him. So he gives me the phone. Everybody else in the world talked to Hollywood except for me. I just basically got on the phone and spoke from the heart, and I just told him, I said, Mr. Hollywood, I said, how you doing, sir? I said, isn't it funny that people been coming to you about this film that I've been inspired to do, and people been coming to you about me? And I said, but isn't it amazing how God works? He just put a person right beside me. His birthday's on the same day as mine, and he has your phone number, and you hearing my voice anyway.
Wow.
And that's how I got Hollywood. So that's how I was able to get DJ Hollywood in the film. So I didn't get Hollywood. God got Hollywood.
That's right.
Because he wanted Hollywood to speak. So all the people that we grew up, I don't care who you are. I don't care if you're Houdini. I don't care if you're Public Enemy. I don't care if you whoever. All of these people respect DJ Hollywood.
Yes.
All of them. All of them. When I say all of them, I'm talking about all of them, capital letters, underline, all of them.
Yes. Yes.
So my purpose with the film, mm-hmm, is to not just, you know, to get on your show and have you pat me on the back, or, you know, people on Facebook and social networking saying congratulations. That's not what it's about. It's a bigger situation than that at hand. I'm using this film as a teaching tool. I want to go around to different learning institutions. If it's a DJ school, if it's people that's interested in broadcast media like myself, I went to college for broadcast media. If it's anything dealing with the culture at all, you should see this film. And what I want to do is actually have merchandising that go along with the film, wristbands, t-shirts, and different things. And by you purchasing these things, proceeds from the sales are going to organizations like the Kids in New York, different things that's teaching kids positive things about music, about hip-hop, about life. And if we don't do it, if we don't do it, you don't have to worry about the origin. Is not gonna, and I just told somebody earlier, it's not gonna matter if you're from the Bronx, it's not gonna matter if you're from Manhattan, it's not gonna matter where you're from, because it's eroding away over time. And as we're all getting older, the same passion that was there, the persistence, the drive and determination that was there in the beginning is eroding away due to commercialism. And the whole marketing machine is making this thing erode away. And as these people start to die out, there's nobody to pass the baton off to the next generation. And make this, I apologize. I didn't mean to come on your show and preach act like Farrakhan, but I got to speak on it. Just parallel to what happened, especially last year, with a lot of the police brutality and killing that was going on here in America, you have a lot of young, angry black youth that are trying to fight a beast that they don't know anything about. They don't have any knowledge. They can't name two civil rights leaders beyond Martin Luther King and Malcolm X. They can't even name two of them with all this technology that we have out here now. And you're standing in the street, blocking the street up. You don't know anything about the law. You don't know anything about your people. Nope. What your people did, your people, what they went through in the 50s, the 60s, and so forth. So how can you fight something that you don't have any knowledge of? You see what I'm saying? So that same thing is parallel to what's going on in hip-hop. The baton was never really passed off to the general, so I can't blame them. It's just that they don't know. They don't have anybody to they don't have too many outlets that they can. So this is why I'm taking such a strong stance of this. People, I do not want people to address this as my documentary. I don't want people to address this as, you know, just another documentary. This hip hop documentary is the one that uplifts, educates, and inspires. That's what this film is. It's the documentary of all. Because it's a teaching tool.
And one thing I know about you, man, I remember talking, you know, to you about this the very first time, and you said, this ain't about me, this is about the culture. This is I don't want to take the credit for this. This is not about me, you know. And I was like, wow, man, this is I mean, he's really passionate about what he's trying to do. So when you passionate about something, just anything, man, it can't fail.
Right. Well, I mean, I've had plenty of obstacles, and I mean, you know, like I said, if I wasn't a believer of the Most High God before now, I am now. Because there's no way in the world I would have been able to make some of this, the obstacles and pitfalls and different things that I had to face. I would have never got through. I would have never been able to get through.
That's true.
So I feel like that God is using me to deliver a message. And the message is through this film. This film was never intended to be a Hollywood film. So it was never supposed to be that. It's supposed to be something sincere, something when you see it, you're like, yo, did you hear what he just said? Or, yo, this is so real. In this world now where fake is the new real, it's like, did you hear what this person just said? They wanted to learn how to DJ so bad that they stole some school turntables just to learn how to DJ.
Yeah.
Now on the surface, be it be right or wrong, that passion was there. You know, one of the guys that was in the film, he's a beatboxer, JR Levels.
Yeah.
This guy said he said when he dies, he's gonna die a beatboxer. It's just like Bizarro when he said, I got fired from my job on purpose and I'm gonna live off of this hip hop. And it's just like when you have people that tell you that they have that much direction and that much determination to succeed. I mean, if other people even had two, you know, I ain't gonna even say two quarters of that, if they just, you know, they even, you know, had a quarter quarter of the passion that I've seen in these people. I mean, you know what I'm saying? The world would be a different place, man. That, you know, goes for me and my passion. And I'm gonna speak on this last part. I'm gonna let you address whatever questions and whatever. But it was like, I'm not even embarrassed. This film drove me to tears at least 5 times. And I didn't want to. It wasn't even about me letting myself down. If I didn't complete it, it was more I'm letting Hollywood down. I'm letting Jahlil and Houdini down. I'm letting Public Enemy down. I'm letting my man Rodney Stone down if I didn't complete it. So you think how much pressure that is. And here it is, you gotta remember once again, I'm not a film dude, I'm a DJ.
Yeah.
And I had to learn how to do everything because I kept running into obstacles with these editors spelling stuff wrong, editors losing stuff. And it was just, you know, how much more do you spend out? How much more sacrifice do you put out to bring forth something that was so good to me and so good to many and employed so many people if there wasn't hip hop?
Yeah. Wow, that's crazy, man.
And that's just a story, man. That's all I can tell you, man.
I was just over here just listening to the whole thing, man. And I'm like, wow, this is, you already told me a lot of the stuff that you're telling them, but that's a journey, man. That's a rough journey to go through, you know. But
it started in, it actually started before I even knew it. Like I said, because a year before it was actually happening, but I didn't have any idea or thought of doing a film a year before. When I initially started filming, I was supposed to start it in July of 2011, but got postponed to October of 2011. Then I actually went up to New York, and I, when you look at the cover, I have really four pictures. The main picture is a picture of the landscape of the Bronx back in the day, and then there's a little smaller picture that I actually took from the Brooklyn Bridge looking into the skyline of the city. And then the third picture is a small picture the picture from the bridge that represents the present. The picture in the middle is the actual place that I actually stayed to produce this film. I have people and family in New York, but I stayed in this little room. It looks like a jail cell. It's just a place where you just walk in and you just lay down, and it's like the cheapest place you can probably stay in New York, because I knew that I had to spend out money on these editors and pay these film people and this and that. So it was like I had my own sacrifice at the same time. So it kind of, when I see that, it kind of make me think about what the pioneers, their sacrifice, and that's what that picture in the middle represents. The third picture is a picture of me and Jazzy Moto, Chill, Jade, myself, JR Levels, and Kev Ski. And this picture represents family unity. And each one of the pictures represents those. The big picture represents the past, and that's why it says on the back cover, it says hip hop, the past, the present, and the future. And that's why we need to focus on the navigation, the direction that hip hop is going in for the future. So when Public Enemy is gone, when Houdini is gone, when Theodore is gone, when Hollywood is gone, when Rodney Stone is gone, when I'm gone, whoever's gone, these young people will have something that they can embrace and that they can carry on.
Yeah. They need that, man. They really need that.
Something positive.
Yeah.
Not just music, but something positive.
Something that's saying something, you know.
That right.
Means something. Yeah. I get it. I definitely get it.
So, you know, that's the reason why when I make that statement and I say that on your show, I don't care if I'm on Steve Harvey's show or Michael Bazin's show or whoever's show, you be Tom Joyner, don't matter. I'm going to say the exact same thing.
Yeah.
Is don't address this as my film or pat me on the back or congratulate me, because I feel like I'm just doing what's needed.
Yeah.
Needed, not wanted, needed. And this success is not just my success, It's your success because you've been there. It's the success of Chill Lover Radio because you've been supportive. Chill Lover Radio has been supportive of me the whole time, and that goes from everybody in between.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to say congratulations again, man, because I've been, I kind of know what you went through because I was talking to you in between, man, and I'm proud of you, man.
So it took, you know, it took, oh my God. I went through, this will be screening number 6 in New York. Basically, wow. What happened is I had a pre-screening. I had about 8 people there, and I wanted them to critique what they liked, what they didn't like.
Yeah.
And that was the critiquing session before I actually put it in the Peachtree Village International Film Festival here in Atlanta. Then I felt like, once again, this screening was, you know, my mother, my father were there. Matter of fact, it was their anniversary, so it made it, you know, a little bit special because they traveled from out of state to come to Atlanta to see me. You know, I spoke on it just like I'm speaking to you now. Some of the things that I spoke to you about, we need to address these situations immediately.
Yeah.
That was screening number 2. Number 3 was at St. James Community Center. This was in December 13. Of course, Kev Ski and, you know, they really embraced me with this film and been instrumental the whole time. And we had the kids there. And matter of fact, JoJo was there. Matter of fact, Little Lep from the New York City Breakers was there. You know, I can just keep going on with names, but it was what it was. And then that same weekend, I had one at the Port Cafe in Manhattan. So that was number 4. Port Cafe was number 4. Then in September of 16 last year, I had a screening at this spot where this Asian guy had a spot named Min. He had a spot where he had the guys come over and break dance and do the whole everything cultural stuff.
Yeah.
And that was just my audience. That was my audience. So that was screening number 5. But at this screening, which made it different, was Rodney Stone was actually at this screening, and Rodney hadn't seen anything about the film until this time. So it was like he was seeing it for the first time, and he was impressed, and he co-signed on the film, and he simply said that whatever you need from me, I'm going to help you.
Yeah.
And that's it. So that was number 5. So number 6 is going to be at the Hip Hop Film Festival at the National Black Theater in Harlem. That's the 1st of August. I don't know the exact date of the screening, but that's that first weekend. I think it's the 3rd through 6th or something. It's going on for 4 days.
Oh, wow. Man. I gotta tell you, man, you came a long way, man. All the way up to the festival. Film festival. Oh, man. That's insane, man. That's insane.
So, yeah. I'm just expecting the Most High to continue, because I can't see it stopping. And it's just like, you know, it's just been in God's time. It's just, I don't know if it was something that I was doing wrong or something that was missing that needed to be corrected or whatever, but you know, that's what I want people to know, that this was not something that, you know, I even had any thought of doing.
Yeah.
It's just that I was inspired and it just came to me. And just like how it changed my ways, when you're given something, or you know what I'm saying, you really should acknowledge it and not neglect it. So every time when I get up in the morning, first thing I do is pray. Before I even go to the bathroom, the first thing I do is pray. When I come in from DJing, I don't care how tired I am, I don't care if it's 5 o'clock in the morning, I always thank God that I was given something that I enjoy doing, but I can make money at, because there's so many people that they kill themselves for the weekend to come, and then when the weekend come, they happy, but then when Sunday come, they get depressed because they got to go back to that plantation on Monday.
Yeah.
And they do that week after week, month after month, year after year, and they really don't have any peace.
And like, anytime you can do your what you love to do, your passion for a living, man, you're not working at all. Playing every day of your life. A lot of people ain't fortunate to do that, you know. Before you go, man, let the people know, like, where they can actually find them, where they can actually purchase the movie, where they can find you, your material, whatever you want to share to the people before. before you head out.
Okay. Well, first of all, like I said, once again, I want to thank you for taking out the opportunity to set this platform for me to speak about this film, because, like I said, it's very important. Right now, at this particular point in time, I don't have distribution. I don't have any of that type stuff right now, but yeah. I do have a website, and it's exactly how the title is spelled. If you're writing this down, it's kind of funky spelling. It's hip-hop-ish.
Yeah.
So it's www.music, muzikluvahaz.com. Once again, www.muzikluvahaz.com. That's Music Lovers. That's how it's pronounced. Even, I mean, it's funny because I've had people, and I gotta share this with you, I've had people say, I don't like the name, I don't like this, and even the name has been confirmed. What happened when I had to postpone the trip, the only thing that I had, I didn't even have a name for this film when I was in development. I just kept saying, why do I love this hip-hop? Why do I love music? Why do I do this? Why does it work? Why don't it fail me? Why? That's all I knew. I didn't have any other part of it.
Yeah.
So when I postponed the trip, I was actually in D.C. at the time, and I was actually going to New York. I was going to ride Megabus from D.C. to New York. I postponed it, so, of course, being from V.A., I'm going to go home for a minute, and I'll fly back from V.A. to Atlanta.
Yeah.
So when I was on the plane, I was on my way coming back to Atlanta. There was a guy that was reading a paper. I don't know what the paper was, but he had the paper, and it said, "Why are you who you are?" That's what it said. And it caught my attention because I had the word "why," but I didn't have the rest of it. It was, "Why are you who you are?" Like a question. So it caught my attention, and it was like, seriously, I'm not even joking, it was like everything froze, and my eyes just focused on that, and that's what that part came from. But the second part came from Jalil, from Houdini. We were talking, and Jalil's my dude, and I liked a lot of times ask him questions, you know, behind the scene questions, like, how did you come up with Friends? How did you come up with the song Friends? And where these concepts and ideas come from? So we were talking about it, and he said, "Yo, it's like, I'm just mocking Jalil.
Yeah.
Yo, B man, yo man, you're not really addressing it to anybody, B man. You know, why don't you say something like Music Lovers, but don't spell it the regular way. Spell it kind of hip hopish where people want to look at it." and when he said that, that's what, because I was fighting between music and hip hop, and he was saying, "Well, hip hop is music." So by you saying Music Lovers, that covers everything. And this is what Jalil told me. So the spelling came out the way that it came out. And that's how I got Music Lovers, Why Are You Who You Are. That's how the title came up about. Now, I got to add another part to that, and then I'm through. When the design for the shirt came about, something told me, I don't know if I dreamed it, I don't know if God told me it to me in my sleep, but something told me to make the word "why" kind of big. So when you see a person with a shirt on and they walking towards you, why? You like, why what? So it makes you look at the shirt at eye level. So the design of the shirt was supposed to be "why" in the middle, Music Lovers at the top, and "Are You Who You Are" beneath that. Now, when I made the first prototype shirts, I was supposed to put the prototype shirts on certain people, like Mel Star, certain people. I sent one to Japan, sent one to Australia. So it wasn't just here in the United States. It's already starting to hit global.
Yeah.
What happened was Mel took his picture with the shirt, because I wanted people to take the picture with the shirt on, put it on social networking so people could see it. They start seeing it. So Mel took his picture with the shirt on in front of a mirror, so the letters reflect backwards. So the word WHY, which is YHW, a friend of mine, Steve that's in the film, saw the picture with Mel with the shirt on, and he said, "Oh, praise is due to the Most High." And I didn't understand what he's saying because he was looking into the mirror.
Yeah.
And the word YHW is God's name in Hebrew. Go Google search it. So I knew that the name was confirmed. So it's like I had people, "I don't like the name," and I'm like, "I don't care," because I know that God is speaking to me, because this is it. he wants me to address this situation on his behalf.
Yeah.
That you're poisoning and polluting these kids' mind with all mm-hmm. this gay stuff on TV, the yeah. gay video games where you got to wreck the guy to get out of jail or whatever. All this stuff, this worldly stuff, we're glorifying it and we're making it glorified. And that and the kids don't have a chance in hell when every time you turn on the radio is somebody cheating or doing this or that, and then, you know, they go to school if it ain't kids cursing or doing this, if it ain't, I mean, and no disrespect, but when you have people like Future and you talking about popping Molly and you know, and Percocet and all this, that's not good. Because see, these kids don't know the difference between reality and fantasy.
You're right about that. You hit it right on the head.
I'm gonna go ahead and say it because I feel it. I hate my heart. I'm coming at their ass because I'm sick of them because they put their smudge in hip hop. They're using the name hip hop in the wrong way. They make people believe that hip hop is some niggas fighting in a store, niggas fighting out in the street. I'm sick of that shit.
Yeah, that has nothing to do.
It don't have nothing to do with hip hop.
They
taking advantage of it.
I'll take it somewhere. Love and hip hop has nothing to do with hip hop.
Right. All of that.
Just call it love. It has nothing to do with hip hop. No, I mean, but I'm not hating on the show. If you like that show, so be it. But that has nothing to do with hip hop. And y'all know I'm right.
Right. But see, that's the whole point that I'm trying to make. They're using it in the wrong way. And so you have to realize there's power in words.
Yeah.
There's power in words. So you can speak blessings over yourself or you can curse yourself by using certain words.
Yeah. Yeah, and a lot of that drives people to say, oh, I hate hip-hop. I hate hip-hop. I don't like how they mumble. I can't understand what they're saying. That's not hip-hop. That's different. That's rap.
Right.
That's entertainment. Entertainment. Right. Hip-hop is totally different. It's hip-hop is a way of life. It's a culture. People don't understand that.
Right. But people that's living it understand it, and that's the reason why even with this film I would feel like I'm doing hip hop a disjustice if I don't speak about the writers, if I don't speak about the b-boys, if I don't bring the element of beatboxing, if I don't bring the element of MCing, all of it, the element of DJing, all of it together, and then also, you know what I'm saying, that element of knowledge. And this element of knowledge is what I'm bringing forth. So with that being said, people that purchase the DVD, purchase the wristbands, purchase the t-shirts or any other items, or even donate to this project is going to be blessed by the Most High, because you're helping to assist in his will. And you become a part of a organization. So once you become a part of the organization, people are going to recognize that you're a music lover and that you're down for the world movement.
You support something that's real.
That's right.
Out of all the stuff that you buy, all the stuff that you go out and buy, like the kicks and the shirt and the jewelry and all that stuff that don't mean nothing. Support something that's real, man. This year. If you can't do it no other year, this year, support something that's real and that's saying something, man. That's going to educate you on things that you might not know. I'm just going to leave it at that, bro.
Right, so let me make this last thing on my information. So the website is one way. If you want to befriend me on Facebook, you can go by my government name. My government name is Benton, B-E-N-T-O-N, Benton. My last name is Jeter, J-E-T-E-R, like Derek Jeter, the baseball player. You can befriend me there, or you can Google search Music Lovers. I have a radio, a Music Lovers radio group, and I also have a Music Lovers Why Are You Who You Are group. So there's two. But if you go on YouTube, you can put Music Lovers in and see all kind of video footage, behind the scenes, you know, just documentation of what I'm saying, if you want to check that out. But you know, once again, I want to thank Chill Lover Radio. I want to thank you, King, you know what I'm saying, for having me be able to speak about this.
Yeah, definitely, man. Hey, thanks for calling in. I see a lot of people still locked in, so you held some people's attention tonight. You might have told them some things that they may not, you know, have known. You know, so hey, I Thank you, man. Thank you for calling in.
Yes, sir.
We definitely gonna be talking in the future, man.
All right. I appreciate you.
Hey, have a blessed night.
All right, man. Peace to y'all, man.
Peace.
Don't forget to stay in tune to Chill Lover Radio. It's me and DJ ZB Atlanta, baby. I'm out of here.
Appreciate it, bro.
Peace.
Peace.